Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hartman and I'm joined now by Fraser Nelson and Katie Balls. Now, there's been a big development overnight on the Brexit negotiations. Katie, just explain what's happened.
So the government have had some respite from Brexit problems, but only really because they were replaced with other problems, mainly around Windrush and then Syria. But it's come back to a bump today because what's happened is in Brussels, the Telegraph reports that there's been discussions going on for the past few weeks over solutions to the Irish border problem. Ollie Robbins for the British side has been trying to lead it here and put solutions forward, and it turns out that the EU has rebuffed every single one of them, and actually quite comprehensively. So all the reports of this say they, you know, line by line explain why none of these would be okay. It's not hugely surprising. We know it's the most difficult issue. But what I think will be of real concern to Brexiteers on this issue is that Theresa May has agreed to a footstop to get to this stage whereby if a solution to the Irish border can't be found, Britain basically just stays in a customs union. And therefore, the big concern when they did do that was that it would mean that the EU didn't really feel the need to try and get to grips with Britain's proposals. And this most recent report would suggest that maybe those fears were correct.
Time is kind of running out for this, isn't it, Fraser? Do you think May can work her way through the deadlock? I understand she's going to be holding weekly Brexit war cabinet meetings just to try to get through this bit.
Yes, I mean, she might need daily Brexit war cabinet meetings at the rate this is going. And by the way, we can see how huge mistakes like with the Windrush debacle can happen, given that the government's attention is clearly elsewhere. Now, the EU is in quite a good position to play hardball. It said it wants agreement in Ireland before anything else. It wants agreement in a matter of weeks. If it has rejected all the British options, then what does Britain then do? Obviously, the answer to that is the so-called backstop model, which looks a lot like something that would stop Britain really leaving the customs union. And also, Sir Ivan Rogers, who was the UK's former top official in Brussels, said yesterday that he believes that the only solutions they're talking about now are technological solutions. In other words, no hard border, but using cameras or what have you, which he describes as a bit of a fantasy Ireland unicorn model. So we've got the situation now where Britain can say, we think these are the solutions, the EU can say no, and then what happens in this impasse? Theresa May has unfortunately for her, very unfortunately for her, given up the option of saying, OK, in that case, we're going to walk away with no deal. If she had the infrastructure to cope with a no-deal Brexit, then she would be able to make that threat and the EU might be a bit more accommodating to what she's proposing on Ireland. But if she has to accept whatever the EU offer, it's logical that the EU will drive a far harder bargain, knowing that because of this lack of preparedness, the Brits are not in a position to argue.
Katie, what sort of mood is the Cabinet in about Brexit at the moment? It's been quite a rocky week for Theresa May and her Cabinet ministers with the Windrush row, given Amber Rudd blamed the Home Office and thereby sort of implying that Theresa May's time there had also led to a bad culture there, and also with Sajid Javid speaking out about Windrush. Are there tensions re-emerging on Brexit as well?
I mean, I think there's always some degree of tensions on Brexit, but in a way, Brexit creates less tensions than things like Windrush. I think Windrush has managed to remind the Cabinet of concerns they have with Theresa May that they had put aside after a few good weeks on the international stage. I think there's a deep frustration in Number 10 at the way, you know, they managed to win several votes on Syria in the House, which should have been a real coup for her, the fact that she managed to take this out. But actually, all we're talking about is whether, you know, her policy is a bit like Nazi Germany. So I think there are Brexit tensions. I think Theresa May would much rather the Cabinet be dominated by Brexit tensions than the current ones. But I think it's still Windrush, which is really defining this week for her.
And Fraser, there's been a report today that the immigration bill is going to be delayed as well. What's going on there?
There's a big debate now in the Tory party about immigration policy, and Theresa May is in the minority. She privately complains that only Gavin Williamson, the Defence Secretary, and Karen Bradley, the Northern Ireland Secretary and her protégé, agree with her on immigration, and that the rest of the Cabinet are wets in her eyes. They might regard themselves as more liberal. Boris Johnson and Michael Gove yesterday both took to the radio to make a liberal case for immigration. They were saying that, yes, people want it controlled, but now that Brexit will assure that control, we've got the potential to give another discussion about immigration, about how how once you're able to control all immigration, not just non-EU immigration, then we can stop being so mean to the Indians, Chinese, Americans who want to come in here. So there is a big debate now. The premise is that Windrush has been a disaster, an absolute disaster, not just for people affected, but for the Conservative Party, for the reputation of the government, and they need to take remedial action by promising a more liberal approach to immigration. There is a clear majority in the cabinet for that right now, and I think that the Windrush debacle has actually encouraged Theresa May's critics to start making the case themselves, not waiting for her permission. I think we can expect to hear a lot more about the case for cutting students out of the immigration numbers and the case for liberal conservatism in general, which is interesting because we don't have a person yet who's going to succeed Theresa May, but we do have an agenda coming together which is going to succeed her sort of conservatism. It's a more liberal conservatism, and I think it's on its way.
I think what's also quite interesting on that point is we now have several new conservative think tanks popping up, and they've all been kind of announced this week. And it is partly because there is this frustration at the lack of policy coming from Number 10. And there's some like Onward, which is connected to Theresa May because it's one of her former policies. But you see the people being attracted to that, people like Kemi Badenoch, Tom Tugendhat, and Michael Gove somehow is linked to them all. There is this idea that there is a pushback definitely to get more kind of liberal conservatism out there.
But it's not just the conservatives who are having some trouble at the moment. Last night, Emily Thornberry, Labour's shadow foreign secretary, was on Question Time, and she made this comment about the investigation into the chemical attack in Douma.
This is serious stuff.
It is serious stuff.
And you appear to be saying that we have to do something which, according to Liz Truss, the Russians prevent ever happening.
Well, first of all, I don't accept what she says about the Russians stopping it. My understanding is that it's a United Nations problem with their red tape and their safety and they're getting their safety stuff through to.
Katie, why is Labour pursuing this line?
This was quite striking because we know that Jeremy Corbyn often has more favourable words to say about Russia and Russia intelligence and Russia government lines than UK government lines and British intelligence. But up until now, it has seemed that Emily Thornberry has been quite critical of Russia. She was quite critical soon after the alleged attack. And obviously on Question Time, she seemed to be going much more towards the leader's office stance, who's saying, we don't have all the evidence, and suggesting this idea that the reason the OPCW can't go and actually test out the chemical attack to see what was is due to UN red tape, which I think to most people just seems quite comical, given that we know people tried to get there this week and they have been shot at.
Fraser, do you think that this is going to increase tensions within the Labour Party as well, or have things gone so far they can't get any worse?
I don't know. It's difficult to think of anything that can make tensions even greater in the Labour Party than they are now, except maybe the results of a local government election. They're going to be coming in quite soon. And I think some Labour MPs have been holding fire, waiting for the campaign, thinking we're not going to do too many hostile things on the leader while the party's trying to win in London and elsewhere. So I think we'll have to wait until after the results of that campaign to see how much steel really is in the spine of the Labour moderates, who are getting, as you say, more and more angry all the time.
Thank you, Fraser, and thank you, Katie. And you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes Store and all other good podcast apps. You can also get a special offer for podcast listeners, which is 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12 and a free limited edition Moleskine notebook. Go to spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Thanks for listening.